Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 17th of July, these are our main stories. Marking exactly 50 years since the launch of the Apollo 11 mission that landed on the moon, recollections from people who were there, the European Parliament has narrowly voted for the German Defence Minister Ursula von der Leyen to be the next president of the European Commission, and 180 people are known to have died in monsoon flooding in South Asia. Millions are displaced. Also in this podcast, 10 Turkish sailors have been taken hostage by pirates off the coast of Nigeria. The Turkish government says it's watching the situation.
We are monitoring this incident. Turkish Foreign Ministry and intelligence agency are working on this matter intensely.
And the US military warns alien hunters over a proposed mass invasion of the Area 51 Air Force Base in Nevada. It all started with this.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
That was John F. Kennedy in September 1962. The ambition of that speech came to fruition 50 years ago on Tuesday, part one of it at least, the liftoff. The moonwalk itself was 50 years ago on Saturday. Neil Armstrong died 5 years ago, and the other two Apollo 11 astronauts, Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins, were due to be back together at the launch site on Tuesday. Sadly, Buzz didn't appear, so it was left to Michael Collins to describe his memories of the launch from Cape Canaveral on board the rocket Saturn V.
Your whole body is shaking, your feet underneath you are shaking in the mud, and you think, my God, this is what they mean by power. This gives you an entirely different feeling, a different concept of what power really means. So you have to be there and have your belly shake before you can really evaluate a Saturn V.
That rocket was to propel the three intrepid astronauts into orbit on the first stage of their four-day journey to the moon. Our North America correspondent Jane O'Brien has been at the Kennedy Space Center, and she told us what she made of Michael Collins' address.
Well, his descriptions of what it was like to be on board this rocket, I think, were absolutely staggering. Just such a vivid account, narrated at the precise moment 50 years ago that he would have been on board for real. And I'm actually standing next to a Saturn V rocket as we speak. First time I've been next to a rocket of this size, and it is absolutely huge. It's taller than the Statue of Liberty. It travels at speeds in excess of 7 miles a second, which is amazing. But the capsule where they all sat for takeoff is equally mind-blowing because it's so small and it's so fragile. And when Michael Collins was talking about how he was worried at certain stages of the takeoff and how he felt vulnerable, well, you can actually see what he means, because they were so exposed on top of this, basically a huge pile of explosives that thrust them off the Earth and then launched them into orbit and then propelled them on the way to the moon. The bravery of those three men is quite staggering.
And half a century on, the public is still enthralled by the moon landings, by this achievement. Why do you think that is?
I think it's the celebration of human endeavour. It's something, it's not just about the science and the technology that enabled this to happen, but it's the spirit that was capable of having a dream and a goal this big and then capable of fulfilling it. And I think that is what people are celebrating most today. A good opportunity for the Trump administration, because, of course, Mr. Trump has said that his ambition now is to get people back onto the moon in 2024. For that, he's going to need money. for that, he's going to need Congress, which holds the purse strings. So if he can garner political will, which of course is motivated by public sentiment, then there is a chance that this could happen. But it is a very ambitious goal. And what's interesting, Jackie, is speaking to children who've come from all over the country to be here today, they're actually not so interested in the moon as they are in Mars. They kind of feel that, OK, seen the moon, got the T-shirt, done that, let's go on to Mars. So I think for many people, especially the next generation, that's the new big goal.
That was Jane O'Brien standing next to a rocket at the Kennedy Space Centre. The outgoing German Defence Minister Ursula von der Leyen has been elected President of the European Commission, despite stiff opposition. She is the first woman to hold the European Union's top job and will take up her new post when the incumbent Jean-Claude Juncker steps down at the end of October. As the result was declared, the new Commission President-elect addressed the Parliament.
The trust you placed in me is confidence you placed in Europe. Your confidence in a united and a strong Europe, from east to west, from south to north.
What will be a concern to the power brokers in the EU is the fact that nearly half the delegates rejected her nomination. Many of the 327 MEPs who voted against her were unhappy that their system for choosing candidates was ditched by national leaders who anointed her in a backroom deal. Our Europe correspondent Damian Grammaticus has been following events. So was Ursula von der Leyen always going to be elected?
No, and as we saw there, she just scraped past that 50% level that she had to pass. She got 52% of the votes, but of that 750-member chamber right here, over 300 voted against her. And that, I think, is going to be a source of some real difficulty for Ursula von der Leyen. So European leaders will be breathing a real sigh of relief now because they were not certain she would get through. They had struggled to come up with her name as a package of top jobs. She is there, but the question will be, has she had to rely on some votes that she would rather not do? So there we're talking Eurosceptic right-wing MEPs. She was trying to appeal to the sort of pro-EU left parties. But she might not have really got those votes. Might have been others that got her through.
Damian Grammaticus. 10 Turkish sailors have been taken hostage by pirates off the coast of Nigeria. The shipping company affected said its cargo ship was sailing from Cameroon to Ivory Coast and had no freight. The Turkish ruling party spokesperson Omer Çelik held a news conference earlier.
We are monitoring this incident. Turkish Foreign Ministry and Intelligence Agency are working on this matter intensely. I will not give you detailed information about the ongoing operation for the sake of our actions. However, you should know that we're following the incident from the start with sensitivity and all of our units are focused on this matter. We're also monitoring the developments from here within our capabilities.
For more, here's our Nigeria correspondent, Myeni Jones.
News agencies say the attack happened overnight between Monday and Tuesday. 10 out of the 18 crew members on the ship were abducted. According to the shipping company involved, there have been no injuries or casualties so far. A spokesperson for the ruling Turkish AK party says the government is following the matter and called for the sailors to be released safely. Nigeria has been a hotspot for piracy over the past decade, but there's been a decline in attacks in the last 12 months. According to the International Maritime Bureau, instances of piracy off the coast of Nigeria have gone down from 22 in the first quarter of 2018 to 14 in the same period this year. The IMB believes this may be due to the Nigerian Navy deploying more patrol boats to respond to incidents. But it says Nigerian waters remain risky. The surrounding Gulf of Guinea is the most dangerous area in the world for piracy, according to the International Maritime Bureau. All of the crew kidnappings so far this year have taken place there. 21 crew members have been kidnapped during 5 separate incidents. Other countries where incidents were reported include Benin, Cameroon, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Liberia and Togo.
That was Myeni Jones. The authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo say that a pastor who was the first confirmed victim of Ebola in the crowded eastern city of Goma has died. The death has raised fears that the outbreak will spread. Here's Will Ross.
The governor of North Kivu province, Kali Zanzu Kasavita, called for calm as he announced that the evangelical preacher had died. He said the case had been detected quickly and the passengers who travelled with him had been identified. But Ebola reaching Goma is extremely worrying. In such a bustling, densely populated city, it's hard to trace and isolate people who may have come into contact with the virus. And the fact that a preacher chose to visit an infected area where he frequently touched worshippers, including the sick, shows that ignorance is still a major problem and far more education about Ebola is needed.
That was Will Ross. President Trump has once again been stoking controversy on Twitter. This latest row is over a series of messages directed at a group of four Democratic congresswomen, women of colour, telling them to go back to the places from which they originally came. All four lawmakers are American citizens and all but one were born in the US. So how is the president's language being received in electorally key areas? Our North America reporter Tara McKelvey sent this report from Virginia.
If you're not happy here, you can leave. And that's what I say all the time. That's what I said in a tweet, which I guess some people think is controversial. A lot of people love it, by the way. A lot of people love it. But if you're not happy in the U.S., if you're complaining all the time, very simply, you can leave. You can leave right now.
The four female members of Congress who were the targets of the president's angry tweets also made their views clear. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez represents a district in New York.
The first note that I want to tell children across this country is that no matter what the president says, this country belongs to you. Mm-hmm. And it belongs to everyone.
The tweets by President Trump are clearly racist.
Doug High is a former communications director for the Republican National Committee.
It's disheartening at best. It's angering as well, in part because the president is knowingly taking us to a bad place that is a very tender spot in our nation's history when it comes to race. And he picks at those scabs that are very evident and does so in a way that he knows will draw not just outrage, but draw maximum political coverage.
Leesburg, Virginia is about an hour outside of Washington, and it looks like a quintessential American small town. It has a main street with American flags all up and down, and it's also a place that's in a swing county. It's gone for Republican presidential candidates and also for Democratic candidates. I'm standing here in the shadow of a Confederate statue near the main street. It's a memorial to Confederate soldiers who died during the Civil War, and it's also a reminder of the nation's history of slavery. The question is, has President Trump reopened one of the nation's deepest wounds with his racist tweets?
That's his style. I'm concerned about his performance. I don't care about his tweets.
Some people say the tweets are racist. How do you feel about that?
He's not a racist.
We support President Trump, but...
We don't exactly support all his tweets.
Yes.
I think he should...
He should possibly ask somebody before he tweets what he does.
Yes, we agree, yes. But we do support him because he's getting things done.
But not everyone I met in downtown Leesburg agreed with that. Susie Morstein sells antiques and has lived in the city for more than 20 years. She sees the president's tweets in a different light.
I think they're beyond the pale. We have enough racial issues here in this country that we're trying to work through, and he just constantly seems to antagonize and just brings out the worst in everybody.
Tell me more about how you think his tweets, so his remarks about these congressmen, plays into that.
Well, he is the president of the United States of America, which means he's supposedly my president, and he should be speaking for all of us. And I really don't know very many people that think and talk that way. I find it scary. I was just saying at work today that I thought, sometimes I think I'm in a dream and I'm going to wake up. And it's so real. It's just very scary.
The United States broke apart in the past and it's taken a long time to heal. And now it has a president who specializes in dividing people, not uniting them. Here again is Republican strategist Doug High.
Donald Trump motivates people one way or another, either for good or for bad. But ultimately, not a ton of people who are undecided out there to persuade from one side to the next. So if you're Donald Trump, you're going to do more of this.
So as Americans look towards 2020 and the president ramps up his campaign, one thing is certain.
With this kind of rhetoric, the fault lines between the right and the left will become even more dramatic.
That report by Tara McKelvey in Virginia. And as we record this podcast, a vote is due in the U.S. House of Representatives in the next few hours on President Trump's comments. And the result of that will doubtless be in the next edition of the Global News Podcast. Still to come in this podcast, we'll look back at the life and career of the South African singer Johnny Clegg, who's died. A broadcasting regulator in Belgium has opened an investigation into a TV news report about tourists who said their holidays had been spoilt by the bodies of dead migrants washing up on the beach. The comments were made by Belgian citizens on holiday in the Tunisian island of Djerba. Here's our Europe regional editor, Mike Sanders.
The report on a Francophone television channel cuts straight to the chase. A bad start to the holiday for Charlotte from Liège, said the reporter. She'd just arrived in Tunisia and she found a body on the beach. Similar tales of ruined vacations ensued. The tone triggered condemnation on social media and complaints to the regulator. One newspaper decried the revolting asymmetry between those from the north who can travel at leisure and those from the south who risk their lives to do so. It said the report had dehumanised migrants, replacing humanity with unbridled selfishness.
Our Europe regional editor, Mike Sanders. US senators have been grilling Facebook about its plans to launch a global digital currency named Libra. The embattled social network had said it planned to launch the project with more than 20 partners, including Visa and PayPal, next year. But it's facing strong opposition from US lawmakers. Our technology reporter Dave Lee is in Washington.
The Senate Banking Committee called the hearing to ask how Facebook would keep its proposed digital currency free of illegal activity, fraud and money laundering. Representing the social network was David Marcus.
Facebook will not offer the Libra digital currency until we have fully addressed regulators concerned and received appropriate approvals.
But after 18 months of crisis and apology, the committee was sceptical about Facebook's assurances that it could be trusted. Here's the Democrat Senator Sherrod Brown.
Surely they don't respect the power of the technologies they're playing with, like a toddler who has gotten his hands on a book of matches. Facebook has burned down the house over and over and called every arson a learning experience.
The hearing was the first of four involving major technology companies this week, all broadly focused on whether they have too much power over competitors, freedom of speech, and maybe in future, the global banking system. But one warning from David Marcus, and one we'll likely hear repeated often in the other hearings, is that if Silicon Valley giants aren't allowed to innovate, others will. By that, he of course means China, where tech companies are said to be eyeing their own cryptocurrency projects.
That was Dave Lee. The South African musician Johnny Clegg has died at the age of 66 after a long illness. He's best known for his anti-apartheid songs at a time when it was potentially dangerous to come out against the system. One of his famous songs, Scatterlings of Africa, featured in a 1988 American comedy drama film, Rain Man, starring Tom Cruise. Here's Johnny Clegg himself speaking to the BBC.
Apartheid put fences between races and cultures, really. It was a double separation. It was racial segregation and cultural segregation. And these fences, although invisible, you know, it's only when I got to university that I actually questioned, why is there a fence? When I was a young boy, there was just a fence, and I found a hole in the fence. I found a way to get over the fence. I went through the fence. I became street smart. And then later on, I basically took on the fence itself.
The BBC's Muhammad Ali in Cape Town looks at the impact the singer's death has had in South Africa.
Very sad news indeed for all South Africans across the board. Apparently he had been suffering from pancreatic cancer, had been battling the disease, and he died at a Johannesburg hospital this afternoon. And there's been an outpouring of grief already. The news has just been announced probably about 10-15 minutes ago on television, and there's been an outpouring of grief. Many fellow artists have expressed their sorrow. And of course Johnny Clegg was widely known as the White Zulu, because he grew up in the Zulu
community in KwaZulu-Natal, even though he was born in the UK. And his music really united South Africans across the board, across the racial divide. And I can remember attending some of his concerts, was just filled with such energy. And of course, when Nelson Mandela was still in prison, he sang in honor of Mandela and called for his release in some of his songs as well.
Muhammad Ali there, and that song was by Johnny Clegg and Savuka with Asim Bonanga. Millions of people across South Asia have been displaced as heavy monsoon rains have hit the region. Floods and landslides have killed more than 180 people, some 70 in Nepal, with further fatalities in northeast India and Bangladesh as the rains wreak havoc. Asmat Ullah is country director for the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies.
In Bangladesh right now, more than 15 districts out of 64 districts, so about one quarter of Bangladesh, has been affected by the floods. We have more than 15,000 people displaced, nearly a million affected, over 11,000 damaged dwellings, and about 3,000 hectares of damaged crops. And you might know that in the southeast of Bangladesh, in the Cox's Bazar district, there are the displaced people from Myanmar. And as a result of the floods, over 3,000 people are displaced. Over 400 shelters are destroyed and another 1,000 partially damaged. Right now, the rain has halted, but the weather forecast predicts that in the next few days, rain will resume. I want to just highlight another point, which is very, very important. It's not just about rain inside Bangladesh territory. Bangladesh carries two of the largest rivers. You know, the Brahmaputra from India becomes Jamuna here, north to center, and then the Ganges in India, which becomes Padma here. So the catchment from the Himalaya regions, the neighboring countries, are all coming to Bangladesh. So even if it doesn't rain, it could be a double whammy, as we have seen in Bangladesh in 1988, 1998, 2007. So we do hope that is not one of these one in 10 years or 20 years phenomena where the river crest would reach the same level and that would lead to massive river flooding. The government is very much active right now from the Bangladesh Red Crescent that we work with. They have 68 branches in this country. They've mobilized about 600 volunteers. What they're doing right now is evacuating people to safe land, providing first aid, doing search and rescue, and providing shelter items as well in terms of, you know, ropes and bamboo to stiffen places up where required. And also, the Red Crescent volunteers are helping the public authorities in food and non-food distribution at the moment.
Asmat Ullah in the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. The Green Party in Germany came second in the European elections in May, overtaking the Social Democrats. Recent polls have even shown them ahead of Angela Merkel's CDU for the first time. Traditionally, the Greens have been stronger in the old West Germany, but that seems to be changing, as Bethany Bell reports from Saxony.
Wandering through the city of Leipzig on a hot and sunny afternoon, Walter tells me he thinks the Greens are bringing new ideas into German politics. It's not an uncommon view here. While the far-right AfD won overall in Saxony in the EU elections with 25%, the Greens came first in Leipzig, the state's largest city, with 20%. Wolfram Günther, the head of the Greens in Saxony State Parliament, says his party is growing.
We are seeing a huge increase in membership. At the last state elections, we had fewer than 1,000 members in Saxony. We were very small. Now we have 2,300, so we have more than doubled in a short space of time. Of course, many of them are young people, but not only. Our members come from different generations and different jobs.
The Greens may have been given a boost by the Fridays for Future movement, which is active in Leipzig and Dresden. But Christoph Meiselbach, from the Institute of Political Science at the Technical University in Dresden says their success can't just be explained by concerns about the environment. He says it's part of a bigger, more divisive struggle about values.
Environmental policies are a big deal in Germany anyway, so we have it across the political spectrum. So this is in Germany, so to say, a mainstream topic. So you can't really explain the success of the Greens by being the environmental party, because environmental issues are a mainstream thing. The success of the Greens is the other side of the medal of the success of the right-wing populist parties. And the Greens are the clear alternative to the AfD.
A promotional AfD video questioning green environmental policies in Saxony. The party tends to do well in the countryside and among those who say they're protesting the mainstream. But it's not just AfD supporters who are sceptical of the Greens. One man, Daniel, a liberal, told me he didn't think much of the party.
The Greens are a party that forbids things. I think they will gain more power, but as soon as they have to take responsibility for governing, they won't be able to implement a lot of the things they promised, and then their support will fall away.
But Robert, a student in Leipzig, says the Greens have a vision for the future.
They have the most futuristic idea of Europe and Germany and its part in the world. So it's not only about the politics, about refugees and everything that leads to it, but more about, I don't know, like a greater picture of the future. So this was most of the reason why I actually voted for the Green Party. Yeah, I think they have good chances. Bigger question is, I think, if they can actually manage to fulfill this, kind of hold their promises, at least some of them. But of course we don't know, so have to wait up. Yeah.
That report by Bethany Bell in Saxony. The US military has warned people who joined a Facebook group inviting them to storm the perimeter of Area 51 in Nevada not to. The Air Force base has long been a source of conspiracy theories, and a million people signed up to rush the facility en masse. The organisers have now backtracked. Our reporter Sinead Garvin told us more about Area 51.
It's a highly classified US airbase in the desert in Nevada. And it was first used back in the 1950s, and that was all to do with developing spy planes, which might explain why people think they are seeing UFOs, because there are planes that they don't know about that were flying over there. But of course, so we probably know it all much more for all the conspiracy theories. These ideas that aliens have been kept there. And then there was one guy years ago who said he worked there and that's what he'd seen, but then there was no proof he'd ever worked there. So and all of these ideas to do with aliens.
I know you've been there.
I have. I mean, it's fascinating. There's a mad petrol station there that's alien themed, but like quite cleverly, like the scrolling ticker on the cash machine, it says, you know, welcome human beings, do not be scared. It's a massive tourism trap.
Now, this whole notion of storming it,
yeah,
started out as a big joke, of course, but now it seems to have taken on a life of its own.
It has. So there's more than a million people have RSVP'd to this Facebook event. It's called Storm Area 51. They can't stop all of us. And so they will all meet up at the tourist attraction and then work out their entry. One of the lines is, we can move faster than their bullets. Let's see them aliens. But then it's gone on to, on the post now, it says, hello, US government. This is a joke and I do not actually intend to go ahead with this plan. I just thought it'd be funny and I'd get some likes on the internet. But of course, the Air Force are not seeing the funny side of this at all. All air bases in America are very highly classified. You can't get on without permission, all the rest of it. It's a threat, they say, to national security.
And of course, all US air bases are heavily defended.
Yes.
But a lot of people have signed up. Do they think people will show?
Well, I mean, they've got to be prepared, haven't they? This is more than a million people, even if just like two show up out of that. Their spokesperson for the Air Force has said Area 51 is an open training range for the US Air Force and we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area where we train American armed forces. The US Air Force always stands ready to protect America and its assets. So that means you have been warned. If you do turn up, you risk being shot.
That was Sinead Garvin. You have been told. Now, if you have been paying any attention at all this week, you'll know I have been banging on about a special edition of the Global News podcast at the weekend, when we will be wrapping up the coverage of the 50th anniversary of the moon landings. One of the people who shared his thoughts on the anniversary was Professor Paul Nandra of the Max Planck Institute, and he spoke to us from the Baikonur Space Center in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, of course, they launched Sputnik, the first satellite, you know, really launching the space age. And then, of course, the first manned flight with Yuri Gagarin. And then, of course, there was this big race to go to the moon. All of those three things, I would say, are great achievements for humanity. So I would put it in that context of just human beings using their creativity, their ingenuity, and being inspired by space, being inspired by the planets, the stars, the galaxies, the universe, all around us. This is what certainly inspires me. And to actually, you know, go out there and try and reach out and touch it, I think it's a great thing.
Astrophysicist Professor Paul Nandra in Kazakhstan. And you can share your thoughts on the Apollo 11 mission too. Our email address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. If you'd like to attach a voice message with your name and your story, it might make it into the weekend's coverage. I'm not promising, but it might. And that is it from us for now. There will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.
A good night's sleep is going extinct. The rise of tech and stress in the modern world is keeping people awake. Some are even turning to cat memes to get them through the night. IKEA is here to help with everything you need to build up your rest reserves. Stylish bedding, supportive mattresses, and unique bed frames. So you can stop cat memeing and start cat napping. See what I did there? Discover new ways to save your sleep today.